Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more about the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, or KIN as it's really known as. And we have Kelly Armstrong, who is the president of KIN, with us today.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. And, you know, KIN, I think as I mentioned in my email, is something that we talk about in Kenosha all the time.
Great.
But we have lots of people who are listening outside of Kenosha. So I'd like to kind of start with the basics of what it is. But before we even get to that, I'd like to know a little bit more about you, Kelly. I know you've been here almost a year, 6 months, eight months?
Yeah, so physically in Kenosha for 9 months. Oh. I've been in Wisconsin for almost 9 years, originally from Louisville, Kentucky. And I have done economic development my professional career. It's really all I know how to do.
That's a good thing to know.
Yes. So it has been just wonderful transitioning here to Kenosha. You know, we're a few blocks from the lake. We have just really fallen into all the great attributes this community has.
That's wonderful. And what made you decide to take on this position if you've been in economic development and doing a number of jobs, I would imagine?
Yes. So, you know, I've done local level, I've done state level, and I've done regional level. And this was just an opportunity that in my career, it's kind of a once in a lifetime in your career. And for the community, it's a once in a generation, right, for the community. And the other thing that I really look at when looking at a community is really measuring their strengths and assets. And I think that Kenosha is very well positioned with the foundation to be able to leverage that and grow. And we can talk about that some more
definitely.
In the interview, but I think all the right pieces are here for success, and so I'm very excited just to be a small part of that.
And we're going to find out about what some of those pieces are that work with what's going on with the Innovation Neighborhood. But let's talk a bit about, kind of a definition of what is the neighborhood. Let's talk geography first.
Sure. Well, you know, the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood really is a vision. It's a vision for the future. It's a vision for putting Kenosha back in the driver's seat and driving economic opportunities, right, with future forward jobs. So very excited about that. The geography, it's a 107-acre site, the physical site, northbound by 52nd Street, southbound on 60th Street, and on the west side would be 30th Avenue. Although we do incorporate those employee parking lots to the west of 30th as well.
Yeah, the ones that had belonged to the Motors.
Yes, yes.
And then it goes to 22nd Avenue, correct?
Or not all the way to 22nd. And that's why I didn't give you a solid piece over there.
Oh, got it.
I say 26, and then there's a few other pieces. And if you include Lakeview Tech, which is actually on our site as well, then you're looking at like 25th, 24th. So there's not a straight line on the other side.
And I think that's what's been kind of exciting. Now I travel up and down 52nd all the time,
sure.
At least once a day, and just watching it first the remediation, which seemed to take forever, mm-hmm. and then actually seeing some development on the site. But can you walk through that? Of course, it began as the Motors. Most recently, it was Chrysler, but prior to that, American Motors.
Sure. Well, you know, the site actually began as a bicycle factory.
True.
If we want to get real technical.
Yeah.
In late 1800s, and then by 1902, it turned into auto manufacturing. Now, I just read last week that it was the second automobile manufacturer in the United States, and it was a year before Henry Ford launched his line.
Wow.
So I think what's really great about that, and something we probably don't talk enough about, is just the track record of innovation in Kenosha, right? And you can date that back, I'm sure, even before the late 1800s. But looking at the innovation and the adaptiveness of the industry that's taken place just on this site alone, let alone looking at the other companies in the area that the city grew up around. You know, that's something else we look at when I showcase and tell the story, and we look at the maps and say, here's where the site is, right smack in the city center. Well, that wasn't city center when it started, right?
No, it was probably the way west.
Yes, it was definitely outside of town, which is where you would have had manufacturing at the time. But now you can see that the city really grew up around it, right? I mean, in its heyday, they had over 14,000 employees. So that's a lot. I mean, you have whole towns that are that size or smaller, right?
Correct. Yes, very. And it would have been a very dense population within, basically, that's a small area. I'm always fascinated by redevelopment. First, the space looks really small. Then it looks really big. Then it looks really small again. And it depends on what is built up on it. Mm-hmm. So talk about, you had soil remediation. You had the little, microbes in there chewing up the bad things left behind from typical manufacturing. That took a couple of years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you know, so the other thing we talk about, right, so Chrysler announced their bankruptcy, I think, in 2009 and then closed the doors in 2010. The buildings didn't come down until 2012 or 2013. Mm-hmm. So there you had, 3 years, stuff sitting there vacant, idle, right? And so that's one thing. And you have a generation of young people that have grown up around a site that has been vacant, right?
True.
Now, I would say as an economic developer, thankfully the site was raised, right?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have a generation of just these old dilapidated buildings sitting there and being hazards and things like that. And, you know, to create a vision and to get alignment around that vision the way that has been done here for the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, that takes time. The other thing that takes time is when you're trying to get the legalities of maintaining, acquiring ownership of such a site that's in bankruptcy, that takes a long time, right? Creating the plan, getting the alignment, but then actually getting the physical work and what you're talking about, getting the site plan ready, right? Getting the site ready, development for shovels in the ground. It just all takes a lot of time, and unfortunately, it's behind the scenes, so people don't see it. And I'm very, very, something I learned very early on in my career is people really only know what they see.
Yes.
Right?
So true.
Yeah, and so we do get a lot of, today, people are saying, what you just said, I drive by it every day, it's so cool, you know, to see it coming along, and hope you're seeing the terracotta panels on the outside this week, they're beautiful. But that corner on 30th and 52nd, traffic counts about 21,000 cars a day.
That's a lot.
Yes. So that might be our best marketing tool yet.
Well, for sure. And, you know, I hate to keep jumping back and forth because I have an organized way about how to bring this about. But I really am interested in, you talked about the marketing side of things. What are you marketing for? What's your vision? What are you hoping to see in that site?
Sure. Well, so our organization, we really have four key focus areas. One being obviously the real estate development. So we have the whole 107-acre site that we'll be responsible for developing. And the way that works is based on the adopted land use plan. We'll work with individual developers to do different pieces and different developments on the property and making sure that it's all seamless and works together, right, and creates the vision that we're looking for. So that's one big focus area for us. The next big focus area for us is actually the Kenosha Innovation Center, which is the building everyone sees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Within the center, curating the tenancy and the programming, so who's in the building, what happens in the building, and how do we make it a connecting point? We can talk about that.
Right.
And then the third piece is really, and these aren't specifically in priority order or anything.
Oh, sure.
But the third piece is really around building out the entrepreneurial ecosystem. So we have a very young ecosystem here in the entrepreneurship startup side of things. And we do have activity, which is great. And we have existing resource partners and players in the space. But what we really want to do is centralize that and make the Innovation Center the point for that, and then connecting that and being the connecting point between the Chicago-Milwaukee ecosystems, right? which is just kind of a natural fit for Kenosha as a whole, honestly. And then the fourth piece is really upskilling and skilling, because, you know, as an economic driving engine is what we want to see this, is that on these future forward jobs, we want to make sure everyone has access to the jobs that will come to this site. Right, the jobs that will be in the Innovation Center, if we get a, you know, an engineering firm that has an innovative or environmental play, or a tech company that's doing software development, right? We want to make sure that our local folks have the talent and the skills to be able to get those jobs, right? Otherwise, why would you do the project? Right.
Exactly. And I think that it's one of those cart and horse things. They will come if you can prove that you have the capability to provide that sort of workforce. But preparation is everything. So right now there aren't all that many jobs that are in the technology field for Kenosha. I know that's a little bit of a gross overstatement, but I think trying to, again, build that, yes, we will have those people if you come here, is kind of tough. And how do you go about doing that? Because I think that's a big part of what you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. Well, definitely through partnerships, right? So we're sitting in Gateway Tech's campus today. I was just talking to Dr. Raju downstairs. I ran into her. And, you know, Gateway Tech is a phenomenal organization that's really well known nationally and a leader in the space of training. And I think one of the things that makes them very successful is that adaptability and the willingness to listen to industry. Because industry will tell you what they need if you ask them. And we can talk a little bit about that too, because I think it's interesting what industry is asking for right now. And so the Gateway's partnership with the Lakeview Tech Academy, which is the first building to come live on the Kin site, it's very exciting, and it's, I think, the perfect building to be the first building, because here you have 400 students that are going to be looking for these types of jobs tomorrow, and we want to make sure they're there, because when these students come out with dual credit, some of them will be ready to enter the workforce, and some of them will have to continue their education, but they're going to be ahead of a lot of other kids. And we want to make sure they stay here. If, you know, you utilize our higher ed education that's here, that's very talented, we have solid institutions. And then, you know, if students choose to go other places, fine. But we want them to take that story of, you know what, there's a lot happening in my hometown. There's growth. There's, why would I want to be anywhere else? Because we do have this access point, right? You can be in Chicago. You can be in Milwaukee. But you can be here. And the cost of living and the quality of life. And I, you know, it took me 12 minutes to get here, Jane, right?
If
you were in a Chicago downtown radio station, it would take me how long to get there? And I'd be sitting in traffic and all the things, right? And even Milwaukee has its taste of traffic, too. So it's not as long, but you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, there's just all these things and the connectivity and anyway.
Yes. I know. It makes Well, I used to work in the Chicago area, and people would say, oh, you come all the way from Wisconsin for this job.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it took me an hour early in the morning to get down here. It took you an hour to get from downtown to get out just east of O'Hare. So you're right, that just that whole quality of life thing is so huge.
Well,
so,
to be right on the lake, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but to be right on the lake, too, is huge as you're looking at where talent is relocating, right, from the coast and from places that are hard hit with, you know, natural disasters and different things, that, you know, we're in a really good place, and we have one of the largest accesses to fresh water in the world. So that's a pretty good place to be. In addition to that, one of the things I always tell people is that Kenosha is actually part of the Chicago MSA, which is the Metropolitan Statistical Area. That's how you measure populations across the country for different cities and such, right? So I think that's fascinating, and that we are the northernmost stop on the Chicago Metro, which is the commuter rail. And I think we overlook that as local Kenoshans, and I think it's just a great selling point to say, no, you can be right in the heart of downtown Chicago, an hour and 20 minutes. You can be anywhere along that train track, which means you could live anywhere, but you could work here. And, you know, from our Kin site, right at the corner where the Innovation Center and the school meet, That's a 3-minute drive to the metro station.
Oh, yeah.
Or a 12-minute walk. You know, it's easy. You're to the courthouse. You're to downtown. You could hit that trolley. And, you know, I just think it has a charm, but it also has an efficiency.
That's for sure. So going back to what you're trying to bring in, you've mentioned it a little bit off to the side with engineering or software development. Are you specifically going after certain firms or startups to bring them in? Because I know you're trying to lease out part of that Innovation Center building.
Yes, so the Innovation Center is now open for leasing, which we're really excited about. And we're still doing hard hat tours and, you know, still got to come together, but it will be open and live later this year. And we're trying to get that filled up, you know, before we are totally open to the public kind of thing. So net leasable, we've got about 37,000 square feet of space to lease, shared conference rooms, you know, shared kind of kitchen meetup area. It's a beautiful atrium, tons of light, everything's light, it's just glass everywhere. It's even on a dark day, it's full of light, so it's lovely. And so what are we looking for? A little bit of everything in the mix, right? This is really a Renaissance project, so you really want to connect between, if I can harken back to the theory of the Renaissance, right, is you have your math people, your science people, your artists, your creatives, your all of that mixing in one place and then generating even more innovation. So, you know, we'd love to have some research and development teams. We'd love to, you know, we're happy to be able to put in a wet lab for research in that way. Tech companies that we talked about, and we're not looking just for startups. We want to have a space that is friendly for startups because, you know, startups are a different story and need,
sure.
Right? But we also want really established companies, too, that are in growth mode and need new space or projecting new space that they need to grow into, but really make sense for the space as far as, you know, not only tech companies, but think about like Abbott Labs having maybe a division there, right, that makes sense since we have 50% of their workforce that live in the area.
Yeah, for sure.
help them so they don't have to commute, you know. You've got, you know, your new announcement with Eli Lilly. Well, you know, we'd love to have a piece of Eli Lilly in the building. You know, I mean, these are things that are on the list. Takes a long time and conversations to make them happen.
Are those conversations happening now, though? I'm trying to get a feel for your day.
Oh, a feel for my day. Wow. Yeah, you know, I actually get that question quite a bit.
Like, oh, I'm sure.
So what does your typical day look like, and what do you do all day? I don't ever sit in my office.
I'm sure.
You could check with them on that. So it's this. It's out meeting with people. You know, yesterday I was boots deep in the mud touring the site and having our regular weekly construction meeting, right, to make sure all that's in place. And then I had a meeting with a venture firm, a VC firm, to talk about how do we partner to make sure that our startups have access to capital so they can actually start up, right? And then you'll have some of your political meetings, right?
Yep.
And then you'll have potential tenant meetings. And then you'll have, I mean, so honestly, there's no 2 days that are the same. But that's one of the things I love about what I do, right? One, you're never going to get bored. There's no time. And we cover a lot of pieces. So it's not, there's no regularity, I would say,
sure,
to my day.
And I don't expect you to make a big announcement here today, but are you getting close to having one of your first tenants?
Yeah, you know, we're in a number of conversations with both small and large firms, and it does take a mix. We want both, right? We want the smaller firms. I don't want anybody looking at that building going, oh, we're too small to be. You're not too small to be in it. Mm-hmm. We want you in it. We want to see you grow. We want to help you grow. And that's the other thing, is about being that central point for startups and business. It's not just startups. It's if you're an existing business and you need to scale or you're growing or you need help with something, come talk to us about it and we're going to source you. If we can't help you, we're going to help you find the right person that can help you. And we have a lot of resources to be able to do that. I don't mean monetary resources. I mean networking resources and relationships that we're developing. to be able to do that. And that's a lot of it too, is out there making these relationships happen so that we have these partnerships in place. And then, you know, our other partners, the higher ed partners, right? So I meet regularly with representatives from Gateway Tech, from Parkside, from Carthage. Like, there are, you know, just continuing conversations about how do we better partner together? What can we do to improve services and community access and a number of things?
Very early in our conversation, you were kind of describing we want to keep our young people here. So make up a person, somebody who is just going into high school. Give me an imaginary pathway for that person who would end up being employed somewhere at Ken.
Sure. Actually, I'll start you earlier than that, if you
all
will.
All right.
So I brought a map. I know your listeners can't see it, but it talks about the investment that's happening in the area. So we are currently housed in the Kela building, which is three blocks south of our development. That's the Kenosha Emerging Leaders Academy, which is a partnership with the city, the YMCA, and then also houses the Best Buy Teen Tech Center, which is powered by Jockey. And next door to that, right, you have the Uptown Lofts development that was done in the last few years, and you have the Children's Library that just launched last year. So if you want to talk about a real track,
Yes. This
person is born somewhere in the neighborhood, right? Goes to the Children's Library. They have amazing STEM hands-on activities for all age groups there. Not all age groups, but the younger age group.
Sure.
The last time I was there, they even have this really cool station. So you as a parent with a toddler, infant, whatever, could kind of keep them there
right.
next to you while you're working on something. So you could be filling out a resume or doing some work assignment or your homework assignment or whatever, and your infant or young child is just in this little cube with you next door. I mean, right next to you.
Yeah.
That's either playing with, you know, STEM toys or reading a book or...
How cool.
You know, having that experience, and what a great resource this is for the community. And then as that child develops and grows, you know, then they start going to Kela for all the amazing activities. There's leadership activities, and there's just a number of activities. I'm sorry, I'm not the right person to talk about all the wonderful things that they're doing and offering there.
We'll get them soon.
But they do a tremendous job, and students are there from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. And I would say, and I don't, this is not my area of science or expertise or anything, but as a parent, I would say that hours between 2 and 7 p.m. is probably where you lose most of your kids, right? That where they choose to do something or they don't have anything to do, and they choose a path maybe that wouldn't take them in a positive direction.
Right.
So I think it's so important to just engage in that space and have that as a resource in our community. And we need more people to access that. You know, we need to spread the word more about that. And then you move on to Lakeview Tech Academy, let's say, right? And you're taking one of the three trajectories they have there, which is biohealth, IT, and engineering through advanced manufacturing and the trades. And you're there for 4 years. You come out, you've got a number of credits, right?
College credits,
yeah,
yes.
So maybe to do what you want to do, it only takes you, I'll tell you, maybe cybersecurity. So you come to Gateway, you finish your cybersecurity certification, associates, or whatever certification you're looking for, and then you're getting a job in cybersecurity, and you're going to go work for Jockey, or you're going to come work in the Kenosha Innovation Center for one of the companies that's in there. Or you come work for a startup that has a cybersecurity focus, right?
For sure.
Yeah, I think that's,
an excellent pathway, and that's only one of many, many opportunities that our young people might be able to take advantage of as things grow.
Yes.
Now, we've been talking about the Innovation Center itself, but let's talk about the housing that
sure.
is being planned around it. And is that also under your purview?
Mm-hmm.
Are you working with developers on that as well?
Yes, yeah. So we're pretty much master developer for the whole site. And just to clarify, the organization itself, the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, we are an independent 501c3 organization. So we have partnership and agreements with the city of Kenosha, and we'll work to develop property. So the other thing that's important, and I know you asked about the housing, but I just want to emphasize with this, all the investment that's happening in the area, including, you know, the buildings on Kin, infrastructure, which is a lot, right? There's a lot of infrastructure stuff that had to be done before you could really see things happen. And so that stuff takes a long time.
And sewer and streets and all fun stuff like that.
So all in, all around this area, you're looking at about $158 million.
Wow.
And that's public and private investment, although a larger percentage of public right now. But I think you really have to appreciate the investment that's been made in the area and look at the other investments that are happening around the community. Look at the downtown development that's happening, right? The Harbor District. You look at the companies that are investing in the I-94 corridor, you know, that CABA's managing. And we're running on all cylinders, which is really exciting.
So. It is. It's a whole different community from, well, certainly from when I moved here in the 80s, which was in an economic downturn area that, oh my gosh, somebody wants to build something in Kenosha. It was like, send up the flares. And now it's like, oh, another, okay, that was last week.
Oh, sure. Right.
And that's
wonderful.
Well,
that's
wonderful.
A good problem to have,
it
right?
It is. It's wonderful.
And
you're managing the development, all of you who are involved in economic development. And mm-hmm. I think that is worth a mention, that you have a vision for your area that you're working with, but it's not being done independently.
Correct.
From what the entire community. It's not going to be a piecemeal thing that will then be useless to all.
Right. And we really look at that holistic picture, and to circle back to your housing question,
yes.
Right? I mean, we looked at housing numbers, housing demand, rates of absorption, which is how fast when you put something on the market, how fast does it get taken up, right? Now, one thing I will tell you is that right now we can't have any single family owner occupied homes on the site, given how it was taken out of bankruptcy and some of the environmental remediation stuff. It's just there's caveats within there that we can't have that. So that's in the zoning restrictions.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things we can do. And when we looked at the housing study, what we look at is you look at the whole region and you look at what housing is around, right? So we just talked about all this great investment that's happening, which also means you're going to bring, right, Eli Lilly's investment, I think they were 750 new jobs to the area, right?
Right.
Well, that's 750 people that need a place to live, right? And so how
preferably in Kenosha area, yes.
So how do we make sure Kenosha is prepared for that and to meet housing demand? Now, that's not my job, that's the mayor's job. But my job is how do we make sure Kin is prepared to house not only the people that will be working on our site, but other folks as well, right? And how do we also be respectful of the existing community and the existing single-family owner-occupied homes that surround the area, right? So we'd be looking at a mix of a different style, townhomes, you know, some market rate, some would be below market rate, which would be more workforce housing kind of product. And then certainly mixed use residential, as you kind of move into the center of the property, you would have, you know, apartment styles above with first floor, you know, coffee shops, cafes, bookstore, you know, whatever, a market, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a great need for grocery
for sure.
access, produce access, that kind of thing. So those are all things top of mind that we're looking at. And yes, you can actually look at the land use plan and that how it's laid out on our website, which is kin-kenosha.org. Again, that's kin-kenosha.org. And you can go on there, and under the developer tab, we have all the developer resources on there. So there's a land use plan, and you can see there with the legend that has the what's meant to be housing, what's meant to be office, medical, tech, and what's meant to be kind of that mixed use piece with the retail, right?
And I would advise our listeners, if you have interest in this, I have the map in front of me, and it's the first time I've really seen it laid out quite this way, Please do go on the site. I think it'll be very helpful to all.
Thanks. Yes, it is. You know, people do want to know what's the housing like, what does this look like, and so we're very excited. And as you see, the plots that are on here, that's all flexible to some degree, mm-hmm. right? If somebody needs a little bit more here or a little bit more there, we can manage that. But the idea is working with different developers on different sections to say, you know, there are developers that specifically do housing. There are developers that specifically do multi-use commercial, right? So there's a whole different list of folks that we have to work with to make sure this whole thing builds out in an appropriate way.
You had mentioned earlier about the parking lots on the west side of 30th Avenue, and mm-hmm. I have to say that had surprised me when I heard you speak to Kenosha Tempo a few weeks ago. I hadn't realized that that was part of the development area. So is that slated for housing or?
Yes. So that's this section here on the map. It's on the far west side, just on the other side of 30th, like you said. And what we would really envision there is a series of townhomes that would have, you know, garage parking and flexibility in the number of bedrooms and just really providing a great transition from the owner-occupied homes on the other side of the fence to, right. you know, to this side and then transitioning into the kin development. The other thing is opening up some of those roads. As you know, most of these roads dead-end back
yes.
here because of the fencing. Mm-hmm. And so as this development comes online, you know, 56 will go all the way through. 56 has never existed all the way through.
Correct, yeah.
It is open now, by the way. So if you want to see the site, you want to get a closer look, you can drive through 56. And see that it only takes you 3 minutes to get to downtown. But eventually that'll open up all the way through, which is great, too, because
yeah.
the other thing that this will show you, which you won't see on the land use plan, but a few blocks to the west, right, the city just purchased or is in the process of purchasing from the school district two of the buildings that were right-sized and closed.
Yes.
So they will take those down. It's what's proposed right now. They will take those buildings down and do a number of single-family owner-occupied infill housing.
Wow.
Which is really exciting.
Yes.
Because we are in a heavy housing demand time.
Yes.
And it's not just Kenosha. It's everywhere. Everywhere in the Midwest, I think, and certainly in Wisconsin, we have a need for housing. So we need to be able to build more.
Yes, and I think most of us realize that the demand for housing has been because of so many of these large companies moving here. But what you mentioned earlier about the natural disasters occurring on the West Coast in particular, that didn't occur to me that that could be a driver of mm-hmm. some of these both companies and people who said, okay, I'm done with the earthquake, fire, mudslide routine. I'm headed to the Midwest where
sure.
I only have to worry about an occasional tornado every 50 years or so.
Right. I mean, it's a big thing. And as a company, you're looking to mitigate your risks. And how do you do that? Also looking at cost of living, cost of running a business. But I think, too, the other thing, and not to get too far into that, but
I'm just curious.
I could do a whole show on my thoughts on that, but
yeah.
I won't. But as you look at the facts, you look at places like Florida where you can't get your home insured anymore,
yes.
right? You look at places in California, like as soon as the fires hit, what were the insurance companies doing, right? And a lot of people aren't going to be able to rebuild. And so what are they going to do? Well, if you have ties to the Midwest or you have family wherever, good chance you find something there to kind of restart rebuilding your life, right? I'm not saying that's going to happen all across the board, but there is certainly a percentage of that. And I think that'll continue to grow over time. And I think COVID really pushed that too for people, right? As you were in the house and you were isolated from people, I think there is now post-COVID a push for that connectivity and in-person meetings. And how do we make that happen? And maybe you want to be closer to family. Maybe you want to be closer to where your roots are and where you came from and more insulated from risk, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm sorry to take you off the rail there, but it just hadn't really crossed my mind. Kin, the not-for-profit organization you mentioned, and your title is president, which leads me to believe there are others working on this. You have a board of directors?
Yes, we have a board. It's a great board. Actually, Dr. Raju with Gateway is on the board. Our board chair is Tim Mahone, and Mark Fettick with Jockey is our vice chair, and Art Harrington, who's a phenomenal lawyer, based in Milwaukee, but grew up in Kenosha, has such a heart for the work, and Nicole Riff with CABA. And now I shouldn't have listed everyone because I'm not going to list everybody off.
Yeah, I didn't. I know how
but
that
is be, also but. On our website. So you can go to our website at kin-kenosha.org, and you can go under the About tab, and every board member has a photo and their name and who represents them.
And I think that's important, is that you're getting this mix of people. I'm sure Kenosha Unified has representation as well on the board, or at least on some of your committees and your efforts. They're considered a partner.
Well, they're certainly considered a partner, yes. I think Beth, who is the principal at Lakeview Tech, I think she's phenomenal, and we have a good relationship, too. And, you know, part of this, too, is for these two buildings, the Tech Academy and the Innovation Center, to be anchor components to the whole development. And we want to make sure the students are getting internships in the building. They can walk across the street and have an internship at different types of jobs, right? So I think there's just a lot of opportunity.
There's so much opportunity, but are there barriers? I never like talking about bad news, but I'm sure that there are some barriers to getting to where you want to go with your vision.
Oh, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of barriers to get to this point, and I'm not sure I would use the word barrier. I would say there's challenges along the way. I don't know that there's anything that can't be overcome, right?
I would think some of the economics that may or may not be occurring as far as the cost of materials for building some of those things are certainly challenges.
Sure, definitely. What we have seen, though, is that because of when the project was locked in and sourced and finalized, like a lot of that was already locked in for the pricing, so we haven't seen a ton of that, yes. Where it would be different if you were launching a project now. But certainly the cost of materials, the cost of building housing, the cost of building an office building these days is much more, significantly more than it was 5 years ago, right? And who knows what happens 5 years from now? Well, who knows what happens tomorrow, right? But who knows what happens 5 years from now? And so that could certainly cause challenges along the way. One thing we have seen the enthusiasm is just the mission of this project, right? So we're a mission-based organization, and at the end of the day, that's what drives us. Now, yes, you have to, finances have to work, and everything has to figure out and pencil out and all of that. And developers are in it for, you know, making money, so they have to make their money, and you got to make all that work. But the interest we're seeing is coming from folks that share that mission too. Like, hey, this is a cool project. This is a transformative opportunity. I want to be a part of that. Yeah, I'm going to make some money on it, but like, I just want to be part of what's happening there.
I would think that would be one of your biggest marketing opportunities, is mm-hmm. just how many people see the possibility of really making a difference to Kenosha, but also making a difference in terms of developing really talented employees for their business, depending on wherever they're coming from. It's just looking at that whole pathway would be exciting to them.
Absolutely, and talent is the number one need, right? For every industry, doesn't matter any industry, any business owner is looking for good talent, how to keep them, how to continue to upskill them, and just really how to keep them and how to get more if they need it. I think the other thing, too, you mentioned Kenosha, and yes, this is transformative for Kenosha, but one of those transformations is making this a regional destination, right? And really putting Kenosha on the map for a different perception than maybe what has existed previously. Right. You know, I think sometimes folks in Milwaukee are kind of that perception of, oh, that's down there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, who knows what folks in Chicago think or whatever. But I think it's important that Kenoshans change what they think as we move forward, right? Somebody asked yesterday, what's the biggest challenge you face? And somebody else answered that question for me. And I thought, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to tell you, you know what the biggest challenge is to get people to move beyond calling it the old Chrysler site.
Yes, I can see where that would be annoying.
Well, you know, and I totally understand it. It's what it last right. was. It's what people know it. And until we really make a mark on what is happening there, it will be hard for people to make that transition. But by, you know, the whole concept and vision for this development is to leverage the innovation that took place in this community by Kenoshans, for Kenoshans, and move it forward into the future. And to do that, you have to respect history and also move forward into the future. And if we want to keep the young folks here, we want to keep our kids here, we need to make sure we're not always referencing, oh, the old site. It's not an old site anymore. Take a look at that building. Are you 21,000 people that are driving by it every day? maybe it's only like half of that because everybody's going twice. I don't know. I don't know if they count the car traffic that way. But,
that's probably not.
I think it's important to become an ambassador, you know, for this development and how it is going to change Kenosha as a whole and the perception. And to think about this, too, with these newer developments, right? You've got, I'm not going to list them all, but Haribo, Microsoft, Eli Lilly, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're not just making cars anymore, folks. You know, we're making a lot of things, and there's a lot of tech that goes into that. And that's not, that doesn't mean we're moving away from manufacturing. We're still very much a manufacturing community. Manufacturing is not the manufacturing it used to be, right? When I talk to CEOs of large and small corporate companies, hands down, one of the things that they really need are people that can do data analysts, people with data science training, that they can interpret the data that's coming in, because the amount of data and information resources that are flooding businesses now is off the charts. Think about it. It relates to our personal lives. How many channels of information do you have coming at you every day?
Oh, right? Exactly.
You pick up your phone, and I don't know how many channels are on there, but that's a lot, right? And then you're talking to people and all of those channels. So if you just put that into a business perspective, now businesses are inundated with all of this information. And additionally, the machines and the equipment they're using can feed a lot of information. But if you don't know what to do with that information, if you don't know how to decipher that information or how to make that work for your forecasting or how you plan for your future orders, right, it doesn't do you any good. So.
Exactly. So having those types of people and that type of developing that kind of technology, in, I don't want to say it's data warehousing, but it's pulling info from many sources and then mixing it together in a useful way.
Right.
Well, what a wonderful discussion. I have learned so much, and I hope our listeners have as well. We've been talking with Kelly Armstrong, who is the president of Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, or KIN, and we do invite you to check out their website at kin-kenosha.org. Mm-hmm. And I'm Jane Herring for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and if you are a fan of public libraries, then you need to make a special point of listening to Monday's morning show here on WGTD. I speak with two filmmakers responsible for a wonderful documentary that airs Tuesday night on PBS's American Experience. Free for All chronicles the history of public libraries in the United States and celebrates the legacy of some heroes and heroines who really helped make public libraries what they are today. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.